TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
So I see an enormous amount of very positive things about our team.
Show of hands.
I don't know, show of hands. Show of hands.
It's Show of Hands.
What up? It is Show of Hands. Minnesota Timberwolves in the news as they appear to be quite a bit this offseason, Manny Hill. Today was the day that the Wolves introduced Ryan Saunders as the 11th full-time coach in franchise history. Obviously, Gerson Rosas has now been on the job for a couple of weeks. There was a legitimate coaching search to find Saunders, who was here all along as the head coach, and he was introduced today, another step towards the new era of Timberwolves basketball.
Doesn't it kind of... And there's so much that needs to happen, you know, for under Gerson Rosas's control of this team for us to really determine how good of a job that he's doing. I mean, we're not going to really know or have a definitive answer, I think, for a few years here. But just listening to him talk in the presser this morning and then hearing the intro to this particular podcast.
Yes.
It's like you can kind of sense a difference.
Oh, there's a huge difference.
There's a massive difference.
And I didn't know David Kahn. I obviously was not, one, covering the team, two, caring about the Wolves when David Kahn was in place. So I have got no memories of David Kahn other than the same memories that everyone else that didn't live in Minneapolis or care about the Wolves had, which is that he was a joke. And I think a lot of you guys have those same memories, but they just they burn a little bit more than it would for me.
Absolutely.
But Gerson Rosas really seems like he has it together. The one gripe I will make is he talks a lot for someone that says action over words. Like, he says action over words a ton, but he's willing to talk a lot. There are a lot of words, and I do trust that the actions will be there. I think he's the right guy for this job. I think Ryan Saunders is probably the right guy for this job too, but it is, like they said, it's action over words, and we have to see it come to fruition before we can really make real judgments on it. But that being said, I think they've gotten off on the right foot so far.
I agree, and I think when you look at this team and what they're going to look like next year, I don't anticipate that the roster itself will look dramatically different from what it is right now.
Just because it's tough to see how it could.
Yeah, and because of the contracts and how difficult it would be to move a lot of these, you know, bigger contracts that are on the team. But I definitely think we're going to see a huge difference in how this team plays and how they look on the court from what we've seen in the last couple of years.
And I think there's going to be more of an effort into player development. They've got case study number one on the roster already, and that's Andrew Wiggins. Can they change Andrew Wiggins? Can they make Andrew Wiggins into a viable NBA player? Because he's not been that, despite what he gets paid, despite where he was picked in the draft. He's not been a very serviceable NBA player throughout the majority of his career. He did, in my opinion, though, take a little bit of a shot at Tom Thibodeau today. Because Wiggins did speak with the media after, and I know you weren't there. You were busy here at the studio. I was there covering the press conference. Wiggins and Carl Anthony Towns both spoke with the media in side sessions after. I believe there were eight members of the Wolves that were there. Towns, Wiggins, Tyus Jones, who will be a restricted free agent, Jared Terrell, Mitch Creek, Josh Okogie, Kata Bates Diop. They were all there today.
Okay.
So Wiggins spoke with the media for a little bit, and he said that I think this is a very positive change. You can see the fresh air. You can see the faces and the positive energy in the air. Everyone's happy for Ryan. You don't see no negative faces. Everyone is happy and we're supportive. It's just a positive energy in the room, so I think it's going to be a great change. Now, him saying that it was going to be a change, I think it's a subtle shot at Tibbs, because that there wasn't that positive energy, and this is going to be quite a different era than that is. And maybe that's something Andrew needs. Maybe it's something Andrew hasn't had enough of, and maybe that will help to bring out a better version of Andrew.
I think that it seems like he needs a positive environment, but an environment that will be positive and encourage him, but also hold him accountable.
And I think Ryan can do that.
Yeah. Yes. It seems like Ryan will give him some tough love, but not in a much different way than what tough love would be from Tom Thibodeau, in that he's not going to be yelling and screaming and swearing at you as much, but he will push you and he will challenge you and he will challenge Andrew Wiggins to get better and to stop taking 19-foot jumpers that clank off the back of the iron. I mean, just to get him to break away from the bad habits that he has on the court. At least that's I think that's what people are hoping for.
Does Tibbs know any other kind of love other than tough? Like, that would be a great poll question for Twitter. Does Tom Thibodeau know any other kind of love than tough? But yeah, that's where we're at. It's going to be a very different looking franchise. Not just the team on the court, but I think the franchise is going to look differently and think differently. So that's something that I think fans should be excited about, that this is a new era of Wolves basketball. It truly is. They're going to be in the modern NBA. It seems, in maybe I'm wrong and you can correct me on this if I am, Manny. It feels as if the Wolves, throughout the history of their franchise, have always been 3 years behind everybody else. Mm-hmm. Even those Western Conference Finals, the Western Conference Finals team back in 2004, it just feels like they have perpetually been 3 years behind the rest of the NBA.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that this is putting them ahead of the curve, because I don't think it is, but at the very least, it's catching them up. And that's, you have to crawl before you can walk. And that's a big thing to do, just to catch up and get to where the rest of the league is, because you do have good players that, once you get to where the rest of the league is, they can help even more.
And that's why I think that even though this roster may not be different, you know, dramatically different in terms of personnel, that we're going to see this team do a lot more things, I think, that fit with the modern NBA. They're going to shoot more threes. They're not going to bomb 45 threes a game like the Houston Rockets do, but they're going to put more of an emphasis on trying to get good looks behind the 3-point line, instead of just, well, if somebody just happens to be open, then they'll take the 3-point shot. But we're not going to really run our system to try and create opportunities for guys to spread the floor and shoot threes.
Yeah, and that's how it should be. That's the type of system that they should have. And I think that it's exciting that that's what they're going to have. It's so different than what we saw last year, than what we saw under the entirety of the Tibbs regime, and what we've seen just in the history of Wolves basketball. I think it's going to be really different. I'm excited to see how the player development staff takes hold, because Rosas has talked about building this coaching staff in a way that's similar to the way that an NFL coaching staff would be built. And if you're a listener of this podcast, it's not a football fan, totally understand. But the way football staffs are built is you typically have a head coach that manages everything. Mm-hmm. And then you've got an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator. Those guys are only in charge of their side of the ball. I think the Wolves are going to have that. I think that Ryan will have a big hand in the offense, but I think that there's going to be another offensive specific coach. There's also going to be a defensive coordinator, a legitimately defensive oriented coach that is all he worries about. Someone like that's going to be on staff. It's very much so needed. They're also going to have a player development coordinator, someone whose sole job is not necessarily to worry about if you won or lost, but getting the young guys better. And that is huge. That's something that's needed so badly. And John Lucas III, who was the team's player development coach, don't know if he'll be back as part of Ryan Saunders' staff, but he was this past year, and he did a fine job with guys like Kata Bates-Diop and Cam Reynolds. Some younger guys that we didn't know could play, or maybe we thought couldn't, and maybe other franchises thought couldn't as well, but he turned them into serviceable NBA guys. So that's a big step, but you need to see that more, and you need to be able to get more out of guys like Andrew Wiggins and Jeff Teague and your younger guys. Like, you need more out of Josh Okogie. He was good as a rookie, but he needs to take a big step in year two, and a player development coach would be huge for that.
Yeah, and then you look at a guy like I think about a guy like Gorgui Dieng. Like, yes. Can they find a way to maximize Gorgui Dieng, whatever role that may be, whatever role he may have, you know, offensively, defensively. Let's be real here. Gorgie's making a lot of money.
Yeah, he's not poor.
And he has not lived up to that contract. Like, let's just be 100% real here. Gorgie's not a bad player, but he has not lived up to that contract.
Part of that was when he signed that contract.
Yes,
that
correct.
Contract was not thought of as a bad contract when he signed it. But then again, what contract has ever been signed? You're like, that's a bad contract, other than one signed by the Lakers in 2016.
Yes,
those
exactly.
were some bad contracts.
But to me, it's like, I look at Gorgie's situation, the money that he's making. Can they find a way to maximize him? And, I mean, Gorgie's, what, 27, 28 now, I think? I mean, he's getting close to 30. And I'm just curious to see, like, what they can do with him to where if they can take him to another level, add some value to him perhaps, and if it's a situation where they're trying to move on and get off of that money, if he plays better, he's a little bit more valuable, and it might be a little bit easier to move him.
Gorgie will be 30 in January, so he's older than that, yeah. He'll be 30 January 18th.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, so he's not exactly not the youngest.
30 comes fast.
Don't tell that to me, man. I'm good where I'm at. I don't need to hear that.
Hey,
I don't
I'm
need
35, man.
Yeah,
I don't
need that negativity, all right? I don't need that negativity.
You got plenty of time in your 20s.
You just said it comes 25. Fast. Yeah.
It does come fast.
Well, so. I don't want to hear that. But back to the Wolves. Like, yeah, if you can get more out of Gorgie, great. If you can get more out of Jeff T, great. If you can, if Tyus Jones is back and you can expand upon his game, that's another huge step for you. And you need to, you really need help in the backcourt because they are so heavy on guards that just can't shoot.
Yeah.
And that's something that needs to change.
I am really, really, really chomping at the bit to find out the future of this. Of the point guard position, because there's so many different directions that this could go, because there's so many question marks on the position, on the guys that were on this team in the 18-19 season, and I'm just really, really, really anxious to see like what direction that they decide to go here.
That's the biggest question mark in terms of who will actually be on the roster, because I was on Score North Live with Matthew Collar last week, and he brought up, okay, well, they're settled at the five, and we went through the starting lineup, and it's a question mark at point guard because we don't know if Jeff Teague is going to get traded. They should, in my opinion, be looking for trade partners for him to get off his $19 million and see what they could get back.
Yep.
We don't know if they'll match or what they'll go up to in matching Tyus Jones. I would guess Derrick Rose won't be back. Yeah. I would strongly guess that Jared Bayless won't be back. And they're not going to run Jared Terrell out there as a starting point guard. And it's hard to start a rookie 11 overall draft pick at point guard, too. So I'm very curious to see what that position looks like. That's the biggest question mark in terms of just who's going to be on the floor right now. Because I think a lot of the other stuff is settled, but that's a giant question mark.
We've talked about this a million times, but what's the highest number you would go to bring Tyus back?
I don't think I'd go over 7 a year. I don't think I'd do that.
So like a 3-21 type of thing?
Yeah, it's I think 3-18 is very fair for Tyus. Mm-hmm. And I think Tyus would probably agree with that. And it's not as if he had the best season. And I think part of it is I hate to bring this up, but you also wonder, does he want to leave because of what he's got going on family wise with his mom? Like, I would wonder if he would want to, like, stay in Minnesota at all costs. I wonder if that complicates his restricted free agency to if he's even looking for offer sheets from other teams. And I don't think the Wolves would take advantage of him for that, but I think it might make it more likely that he's back.
Yeah, and I wonder if, you know, what teams potentially could swoop in and try and sign him to an offer sheet.
Well, there are some teams I think that make sense for that want point guards that are – and it also makes you curious, where is he in terms of where is he at on the point guard ladder for free agency? Mm-hmm. Because there are a couple other restricted free agent point guards, and Terry Rozier is a restricted free agent.
Yeah.
Malcolm Brogdon is a restricted free agent. I think Brogdon's probably at the top of that ladder for restricted guys. What's he going to get? What's Rozier going to get? Who are they going to get it from? And then what's Tyus going to get? Because I don't think it's a question that he's behind those guys in terms of the average annual value he's going to get contract-wise. Like, I think a team like Phoenix is probably going to swoop in and offer a ton of money to Malcolm Brogdon. Mm-hmm. Maybe a team like Chicago makes sense for Tyus if he would want to sign an offer sheet there. But you don't know what Terry Rozier is going to do. And a lot of this kind of hinges on Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Because Boston probably wants Terry Rozier back if Kyrie Irving's gone. But if Kyrie's back, there's no chance Rozier is staying in Boston.
Yeah, well, and I think it was Rozier that he was on. It was either First Take or Get Up. Like late last week.
I think it was First Take.
And I think
no one cares because Magic Johnson went on First Take, Manny.
I know. But I think they had asked Terry Rozier if he wanted to go back to Boston. He basically kind of hinted that he was just ready to go and ready to move on. So that'll be the other thing, too. The other name is, I mean, Mike Conley is probably going to be on the trade market.
Yes,
this summer,
going to be a lot of point guards changing jerseys next year, and I'm curious where the Wolves fit. Maybe the Wolves make sense. Maybe it makes sense to make a play for Mike Conley via trade. Maybe you can send a one, and I would have to do the math, and I don't have the contract numbers in front of me right now, so I can't really accurately speculate, but maybe it makes sense. Maybe you can get off some money and get a good point guard.
That's intriguing. Mike Conley.
It could make sense, but I would have to think teams like Utah, and I would have to think that Detroit, like the same teams that were rumored to be in discussions with the Grizzlies at the trade deadline for Mike Conley, are going to make the same play for Mike Conley, just probably in a little under a month on draft night. I would think something happens there.
What were your takeaways from Ryan at the press conference this morning? Just overall, it seems like he got emotional a little bit. Talking
understandable.
About his dad. Yeah, very understandable. But what were your overall kind of takeaways from just where he's at in relation to this team and this organization?
It's hard to have takeaways from him, and it's funny that we call this an introductory press conference, but everyone that's around the team on a regular basis, like myself and the other beat writers, we know Ryan already. We've gotten to know Ryan already. We didn't need an introductory press conference to learn. Like, I didn't learn anything about Ryan Saunders today because, like, we've known the guy for, like, he's been in the spotlight for how long?
Right.
So it was kind of strange that it was like, we're introducing Ryan Saunders. I'm like, pretty sure I know Ryan Saunders.
We all kind of know him.
Yeah. But the biggest takeaway is just the impact that I think him being the interim had on changing this culture. And that's not to say that another head coach couldn't have come in and couldn't have had a good culture, but I think that those guys being in attendance meant something. That the way the locker room was after he took over and what Carl said about him and really just giving him his vote of confidence in late March, I think that those things didn't necessarily matter to Gerson Rosas in the coaching search, but it was kind of evident today that this is a new era with a new culture. And culture can't change overnight, but he definitely did plant a lot of the right seeds in changing that culture when he took over, and that was something that I really noticed today.
It seemed like him and Gerson it just seems like a really good fit. Personality-wise between the two guys, it seems like it's a really good fit. I go back to Tibbs. And it's easy to say this now because it's after the fact, but there was just something about it that just, you look back on it now and it just didn't seem right. You never really got the sense that it was going to be a forward-thinking approach. It seemed like it's a guy that had a history of success, but it just seemed like everything was going to be, every move, every decision that was going to be made was going to be made for right now.
Yeah.
For the right now. And there wasn't going to be a whole lot of forward thinking involved.
And Ryan mentioned that that's something different about being the full-time head coach as opposed to being the interim. Like, when you're the interim coach, Ryan felt in a way that he needed to prove his worth every single day, that he deserved this job. But now he can have that long view of things that, okay, this decision might not get us a win today, but it's the best thing for our franchise. And when you're the interim coach, it's hard to think like that.
So are there any names out there as far as assistant coaches that you think they may talk to and try and bring in?
I don't know. I don't have enough of a grasp on guys that who would want to move up. And it is a little bit late in the game for this, but because we've seen how many head coaching hires already made. Like the Cavs actually introduced John Beilein today at the same time the Wolves introduced Ryan Saunders. And they already have J.B. Bickerstaff as the lead assistant there in Cleveland. He's a guy that I think would have made sense here as a lead assistant, but they didn't get him, and Cleveland did. So I'm curious I'm very curious the names that they're going to have. I don't have any for you right now, and maybe I should. Maybe I'm wrong for not, but I don't know what they're going to be looking for. I do expect to see more NBA experience on the bench next to Ryan than Ryan has. And that's not to say Ryan's inexperienced. He's been around the league for 10 years, despite the fact that he just turned 33 late last month. But I do expect to see someone that's really been an NBA lifer. I think that there will be at least one person on his staff that's over 55, if I had to guess, and has been around the league for a while.
What do you think of the John Beilein hire with the Cavs?
I think it's a good hire for them. because they're going to be a team that's going nowhere fast. They're going to be a team filled with young guys. And John Beilein at Michigan consistently got the most out of a lot of young guys.
He's a good coach, man.
He was a terrific coach. And I don't watch a ton of college basketball, but I do know that Michigan's not a program that typically gets five-star recruits. They're not like Duke and Kentucky that just gets these one-and-done guys. Mm-hmm. The highest guy to come out of Michigan in the draft recently is Caris LeVert. Well, Mo Wagner from the Lakers, too, but he's an international kid. It's a little bit different recruiting that.
Yeah, Trey Burke was the ninth pick, but that was
and how long ago was that? Yeah,
that was 2013.
So. Yeah, so yeah. It's not as if John Beilein's been getting Karl Anthony Towns to walk through the doors in Ann Arbor. So I do think that he knows how to develop players. He knows how to relate to those types of guys, and he rebuilt that program from scratch. And the Cavs aren't necessarily building things from scratch because I do think that they have more talent on their roster than a 19-win team. I think a lot of that was their best player missed 50-plus games, and they didn't exactly rush him back. so I do think it's a good hire for them. I really do. I think that he's – and everyone wants to say stuff about his age because he's 66 already. Well, since Dan Gilbert's owned the Cavs, no coach has lasted their entire five-year contract there. So it's not like, oh, he's 66. He'll be 71 by the time he finishes his contract. Sure, find me the coach that's finished his contract under Dan Gilbert, and he'll be the first.
Is Beilein a guy do you think that can handle Dan Gilbert? Because Dan Gilbert's not the easiest owner to work under.
I don't know that anyone can handle Dan Gilbert, but I think that Kobe Altman, their general manager in Cleveland, has to be the guy to handle Dan Gilbert. I don't think that that's up to the coach. Like, Tyronn Lue didn't have to deal with Dan Gilbert. David Blatt didn't have to deal with Dan Gilbert. There is, while Dan Gilbert's a meddling owner and doesn't keep his hands out of basketball operations, I don't think his hands are as directly tied in with the coaching staff and those decisions as much as they are front office decisions. I think that it's a bigger worry. It was a bigger problem for David Griffin when he was running things. It's a bigger problem for Chris Grant, who was running things before David Griffin. It's a problem for Kobe Altman, who's running things right now. I don't think it was ever a problem for Tyronn Lue or David Blatt or Mike Brown or Byron Scott. I don't think it'll be a problem for John Beilein. I think it's the problem for the front office guys there.
I feel like you just listed off like 25 head coaches that the Cavs have had.
It's like 6 years, man.
It's unbelievable.
So Phil Mackey, I met with him right before we recorded this, and we were talking a little bit like this, whether or not I was happy about them bringing in Ryan. And I like Ryan. I've got a bit of a relationship with him. So yeah. I partly am happy for very selfish reasons that, like, I don't have to work on building a new relationship with a new coach because
you got to do a lot of that.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. So the first season I ever, like, covered the NBA in any capacity was 15-16. So I've had 2015-16, 17, 18, and now 19. I've had four NBA seasons. Ryan Saunders was my seventh head coach, and I've covered three teams. David Blatt, Tyronn Lue, Jason Kidd, Joe Prunty, Mike Budenholzer, Tom Thibodeau, and now Ryan Saunders. I didn't want an eighth just because I'm tired of it. Like, I wanted the seventh. I just wanted number seven to stick for a little bit just because I don't want to have to continue to do that. So I was happy just like, all right, I don't need number eight. That's a long list for someone my age that has not been around very long.
Well, and I think it speaks to, for the Wolves too. I mean, continuity is a big thing. And when you're constantly changing coaches every year, every other year, I mean it's hard to really get a program going. It's hard to really establish, you know, any sort of continuity when there's a new coach every, you know, every 8 to 14 months, man.
I mean,
so this is I'm totally good with this. We know that Ryan has, you know, there's things that he's gonna have to work on, and you know, the defense obviously needs to get better, but I think the continuity for this team, I think, is a huge, huge thing.
It absolutely is. And it's very rare for people to thrive in chaos or to thrive in adversity. And one of the reasons the Cavs are the only team that have beat the Warriors is because LeBron James and Kyrie Irving are two people that do that. And that's a very, very rare trait. You don't see teams thrive in adversity often. people aren't built that way. People are built to do their best when things are going the best. That's why it was so stunning to see the Cavs win in 2016. And that's, but it's because LeBron James and Kyrie Irving were built differently. And it's okay not to be built that way. A lot of people aren't. Most people aren't built that way. Organizations should not be built that way. The Wolves should be an organization that thrives throughout continuity and things like that. And I think that this is a good starting point for them to finally be able to build continuity, to be able to continue a culture that they started to implant throughout the second half of the season last year.
Sounds like Damian Lillard's going to get a new deal.
He's going to be offered the Supermax, and he will likely be named to an All-NBA. I would be stunned if Damian Lillard's not on one of the three All-NBA teams. I think he's a lock to be at least the second team. So, yeah, he's going to be making himself a lot of money should he accept it in Portland. I think that that's kind of the anticipation that he will say yes, that he's fine being in Portland for the rest of his career. And they did Terry Stotts signed an extension with the Blazers today. Details haven't actually been released on how long that is, but he's not going anywhere in Portland either.
Good for Dame, man. I like Dame a lot. And, I mean, it's... they got swept out of the conference finals, which I don't think is a huge surprise to anybody. But good season for Portland. And Dame is, I think Dame has really sort of put himself on the map even more. Like if you're just now finding out about how good Damian Lillard is, I kind of pity you because he's been good for a long
time. But I also
time.
Understand because you probably have to wake up at like 7:30 in the morning to go to your job at 8. And then Damian Lillard's games don't end until midnight Central Time. Or if you're on the East Coast listening to us, till like 1 a.m. your time. So I also kind of understand the limited exposure that someone in Portland has.
But it was good to see him get on the stage, get on the bigger stage a little bit.
It was. And it's really incredible what the Warriors have done going to five straight finals. I mean, it's really crazy to think, you know, they only need to go to two more finals in a row to catch James Jones's streak. Seven straight for James Jones, baby.
That's a lot of basketball that they've played too. I mean, that's what makes the accomplishment so impressive.
In all seriousness, it's unbelievable. It truly is remarkable that they just continue to win it at the level that they're winning it. We're legitimately witnessing one of the greatest dynasties in the history of sports.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, we will be back later this week with an edition of Raised by Wolves. I'm Danny Cunningham. That was Manny Hill with me. Thank you for listening to Show of Hands. You can find us on the Score North app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you consume your media. We're there. Talk to you next time.